Hello, welcome to Pharma Marketing Talk. This is your host, Pharma Guy, also known as John Mack. And today my guest is Jeff Green, who's the Digital Strategy Lead at New Solutions Factory. And we're going to be talking about how secure are pharma sites and the applications that they're developing, especially for physicians and for consumers, the digital applications and mobile applications. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Hello, Pharma Guy. It's a pleasure to finally be on your podcast.
Great. Why don't you give people a little bit more detail about your background and we can start the discussion.
Sure, that sounds great. So I've actually been working in marketing, especially in digital and emerging media for, I hate to say it, but getting on close to 20 years. And for the last seven, I've been working specifically in healthcare and with pharma companies. I've worked with some marketing agencies focusing on both patient and physician communications. And for the past almost 3 years, I've been part of a boutique pharma marketing consultancy called New Solutions Factory. And basically, a lot of the work I do involves consulting with marketers, centers of excellence at pharmas and biotechs, as well as some other agencies. So we consult and work with some of the agencies who are struggling with some of the challenges presented by this more data-driven marketing world. We've sort of gone from pretty pictures, which was great, and still allows us to make an emotional connection. But behind those pretty pictures is a lot of data and a lot of moving parts to orchestrate integrated campaigns. And so I spent a lot of my time thinking about the impact of digital culture and technologies and tools and how people, including doctors and patients, are using them and what clients and pharma companies need to know to use them effectively.
Okay. This could get into a real serious technical discussion, but I think we're going to try to keep that to a minimum because I was just reading today, you're talking about data-driven marketing, about programmatic marketing, and maybe we can touch upon that. But the main reason why I think you're a guest is we had a back and forth, a little Twitter discussion about your blog post where you right, where you brought up the case of Ashley Madison, and you asked, will pharma have an Ashley Madison moment? And I think what you started was, what you pointed out was, well, you know, on Ashley Madison, a lot of the clients that are a lot of the physician clients that pharma has may have been victims of the Ashley Madison hack, and that may lead them to mistrust giving any kinds of personal information to any other organizations such as pharmaceutical companies. You wanna review for my listeners what your point was? I just touched upon the beginning of your argument, I think.
I know you didn't like my point. Tweets, I remember.
Well, no, I just felt that I thought you were using Ashley Madison because it was in the news, you know, to gain more attention.
Apparently, without realizing it, I feel like we've tapped into a little bit of a wider trend that's going on. So the opinion piece ran in Medical Marketing and Media about 2 weeks ago and did generate a lot of interest and a lot of retweets and a lot of conversations, both pro and con. The point I made, and it was, you're exactly accurate, John, it was to sort of get people's attention and use that very visible hack as an entree to the conversation. So I calculated, according to the reports, about 32 million accounts were exposed, and I'm guessing that probably you can discount about half of those because many of the millions of profiles were fakes. And many of them were outside of the U.S. So I was just assuming there are about 16 million actual accounts that were exposed. And I was just taking a shot in the dark and saying if 1% of those belong to physicians, right, that would put about 160,000 U.S. doctors at risk. And that sounds a little nutty when you first think about it. It's actually more than 15% of all practicing physicians. But on the other hand, you hear that statistic rather about divorce, that 50% of marriages end in divorce, right? It's not that high, but when you look at people who got married between the 60s and the 90s, it's probably closer to 33%. So
Okay.
let's assume that, it takes you some time to get your medical degree. So most physicians are going to fit into that criteria. And if in fact they're married, I was making the hopefully intriguing idea that regardless, there's a lot of doctors who are on SC Madison and who are maybe shaking in their boots a little bit about possibly having their name exposed. And are there going to be sort of waves that wash over us over time and lead certain physicians to say, I really have to be much more careful with my data? And one of the last places that I really want to engage is going to be giving my content, my information to a large pharma company. John, to your point, it's maybe a little bit of a reach, but I actually believe that more than we realize, physicians right now are thinking a lot more about data security and thinking about the risks they open themselves up to when they put in their information. And that especially includes pharma websites. We've actually been living in an era the last couple of years where these large public data breaches are becoming commonplace. And they're starting to hit healthcare quite a bit. In fact, last year, the Community Health Systems Hospital Network, they own about 206 hospitals across the U.S., they had 4.5 million patient data records stolen, and it was traced, they believe, to hackers in China. And social security numbers were stolen, birthdays, telephone numbers, and all this really private information. So you and I both know, John, that in that environment, emails and text messages and corporate governance announcements are starting to circulate amongst all of these hospitals and their peers, warning doctors, you better be very careful about what you do with your information. So Ashley Madison aside, I think there's a lot of steam that went behind this issue, and it's going to affect physicians.
Okay, you talk mostly about physicians giving information to pharmaceutical companies via their websites. And I imagine to begin with, they might not even register at the pharmaceutical websites that want to share information with them about drugs or do e-detailing and that sort of thing.
So you're asking, is that going to necessarily have a negative impact, pharma website registration? Here's why it could. Take a look at most of the websites that pharma produces that collect physician or patient information. You've seen these, John. A lot of the calls to action are things like, sign up today for email updates, or hear the latest about our product. I'm a little bit on my soapbox now because I see this all the time. These are very lame calls to action. They're very vague. They don't give the consumer, who in this case is a physician, a lot of information about what you're going to get. What's the average cadence? How many of these emails or texts or direct mailings am I going to receive? And what are you going to do with my information? I see your link to the privacy policy, but you need to give me a little bit more context before I'm willing to trade some of my personal information in the hopes that I'm going to get some useful value. So I think as these breaches continue to happen, it's going to behoove pharma companies to really make sure that they accentuate the value of these programs upfront on the registration form. Because if you don't, I think we're going to see an increasing number of physicians decide, eh, this isn't that important, I'm going to skip it.
Well, this issue goes way, way back because I remember in 2003, I reported upon a significant, well, it's not significant in today's standards, but in those days standards, you're talking about email. It was a Lilly, FTC Lilly consent decree. I don't know if you remember this. You said you've been around for 20 years, so you should remember this. But it had to do with exactly what you're talking about, an email list that Lily had for, I guess it was people who were on their depression medication, for a newsletter, you know, an email newsletter. And then they were discontinuing it. And they sent out a message to all the subscribers saying they were discontinuing the newsletter, very sorry. But what happened was that it was a simple security issue in that all the email addresses were in the visible CC line so that all the recipients could, you know, copy those email addresses. And maybe there were, I don't know, 700 of them or so. And one person complained and to the FTC, and the FTC then negotiated with Lily a 20-year consent decree in which they had to abide by a number of things to make their data more secure. Now, the main reason why that happened was that it wasn't a hack, and it was only 700, but people's email addresses, but the person who sent this email out was not adequately trained, as Lily's privacy policy said all their employees were adequately trained. So in other words, FTC got them on misleading the public by having in their privacy policy that they trained this person when actually they didn't. So that could be a big lesson learned, I guess.
And it's very applicable now of the real issue with data security. And this is across industries. It's not really these more public cyber attacks. It's people losing laptops, getting laptops stolen with personal data on it. It's a disgruntled employee who leaves and then the information that was on their mobile phone makes its way to an illicit source. It's more human error than it is, you know, these kinds of attacks. That said, there are so many opportunities for data to come into a brand, to come into an agency, to come into a third party partner or media vendor, and then for it to go from there to, you know, over the transom. And I'll just give you one example. I was working with an agency who I won't name about a year and change ago. And they were taking over a website from a client. And the client wanted them to kind of do an audit, which my team was helping with, of their CRM program for physicians. And they created a private folder. And in that folder was an Excel download of all the physicians who had registered over the past 4 or 5 years. And some of the team at the agency, who are fairly new, and I probably not well trained, maybe not trained at all, wanted to get my opinion and the opinion of some other folks. So they just emailed me and a few other people and copied, I don't know, 5 or 6 other folks at the agency, the Excel document, and said, here, take a look at this. We want to get some opinions about this data and what we're collecting, et cetera, et cetera. So this particular agency sent an Excel file with 3 to 4 years' worth of physician data. It had specialty information. It had hospitals where they practiced. It had the number of emails they had viewed, time of opt-in, and so on. They just emailed it to me and a few other people who were outside the walls of this agency. And I said something to the project manager at the time, like, you know, this could really put the agency at risk. And he said, I totally agree. This is the opposite of best practice, but we don't really have a best practice. Among all the different things that an agency has to do in a given day, this just isn't high on our priority list. And they were owned by one of the major holding companies. So it just was sort of an eye-opener to me just how precious data is and just how easily it can be lost or end up in the wrong hands. Now, obviously, I was a nice guy and I only used it for the purpose it was intended, but sometimes that's not going to happen. And I think the the zeitgeist now in popular culture, people are becoming much more aware of the risks of data breaches, and that's certainly going to affect physicians.
Right. So, I mean, that's what really sensitive data, and usually when that data is stored by a pharmaceutical company, I guess it must be encrypted or, various levels of security. Pharmaceutical companies are not governed by HIPAA, which is involved with the security of patient data. So it doesn't apply to even physician data, even if pharma companies were covered by that law. But there have been other kinds of security breaches at pharmaceutical companies. And I know you read this survey, I guess, of UK pharmaceutical companies that said they were talking, I guess, to IT people at major pharmaceutical companies, that two-thirds of these pharma companies have suffered serious data breaches and a quarter of them have been hacked. So
yes.
Hacking means an outsider comes in and gets access to your secure servers and stuff like that, correct?
That's right. And in fact, in June of this year, a couple months ago, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security actually warned pharma companies that potential data breaches from these kinds of cyber attacks could be significant risk issues. It could lead to things like lost revenue and stock price manipulation, because in fact, one of the targets of these kinds of data breaches, it's not necessarily patient information; it's confidential executive emails about what's going to happen next. Will a drug be approved? Because, of course, if that gets into the hands of the right traders, you could make millions of dollars on that illicit information.
Right. I was reading a report about that was published in December. Financially savvy computer hackers are getting into the data of healthcare, pharmaceutical, and biotechnology companies to gain insider knowledge and gain the stock market. So I guess that's happening as well. Even in some of those cases where, data is really hacked, you got to get the passwords, and sometimes they're inside jobs. But in other cases, it's a matter of not protecting or not using the right kinds of security passwords and so on. And I recall a case where a Pfizer Facebook page was hacked because they kind of guessed the password, I'm thinking, from the person who designed the site, what his interests were on that he revealed on Facebook and that kind of thing, led them to be able to guess the password.
It has to be a very savvy and thoughtful approach with vendors, whether they're agencies or whether they are media companies. With all this data in the cloud and with all of these social networks and pages and third-party landing sites and so on, that pharma's, like any modern marketer has set up, you have maybe dozens of individuals and companies who are touching your brand and who are collecting data on your behalf and have a password. Right. So if you think about it, every time you bring on another vendor to build something digitally or mobile or social in pharma, you're opening a door for yet another opportunity for this kind of activity. And one of the points I made in the article about the hacking is, if you look at most pharma IT departments, certainly the ones that I've built relationships with, they're very, very overutilized. They are in dire need of support. They're usually working on smaller teams, and they're fighting a lot of fires, right? So if you get into a situation where there is hacking activity or there's a breach or what have you, I don't know that most of the pharma companies that I'm familiar with are really going to have all hands on deck to be able to address it. And, that's a mistake that at some point it has the chance of of blowing up. And so that's an issue and needs to be addressed.
Right. I'd like to talk about the special case of mobile for a few minutes, if you don't mind. I know you made some recommendations, but there are some really personal stuff that people are able to input on their mobile devices, even without their knowledge, like their geolocation and things like that. So, for example, Genentech made a mobile app for women to locate other breast cancer patients in their area. So you can allow the to know the location of the person, and then they enter their email address and zip code and all this stuff. And now that information is collected by Genentech.
Yes.
Which says in its privacy policy, I mean, it has a great privacy policy, many, many paragraphs that you have to read to start the app. But they say, we are concerned about safeguarding the confidentiality of your information. We provide physical, electronic, and procedural safeguards to protect personal information we process and maintain. But, you know, every company like Home Depot and Target, both of which have been hacked, they made the same promises. So is it possible to protect data 100%?
That's a great question, John. I think knowing a little bit of the history of computer communications and networking, and if you go back literally decades into the 80s and the early days when the idea of hacking first took shape, and there was a movie that was very popular at the time called War Games, which you might remember.
Mm-hmm.
In which, there was a hacking attempt, and the computers were going to take over and start a nuclear war, right? So there's sort of been that fear in the backs of people's minds that once you have computers, once you have these interconnections, you're always at risk. And I would argue that that is the case, because somebody made the great point that when a patch is created, a security patch, for example, or a piece of software to fix a security issue, it's being created in response to something that's already happened, a breach in the past. It's not being created with the intention of stopping a future hack, because that future hack hasn't happened. And you're going to have a cat and mouse game as long as there are security and those who are invested in protecting privacy, right? You're going to have hackers, and many of them are not in the U.S., so this is an international issue, who think that they have an opportunity to hack, break into systems. And, in a way, we're sort of, I don't want to be so grandiose, but we're sort of seeing a little bit of the future of warfare. We're seeing an economic and a cultural war may be waged, in many cases, by foreign individuals, and in some cases, it's actually been traced to foreign governments, right? China has been implicated in a few of these cases as aiding hackers with the intent of harming a company in America, let's say, and using that to economic advantage. So these things are not going to go away. That said, I don't think there's cause for alarm if you're a pharma company, and that was certainly wasn't the purpose of my article. It's that this is an issue. It is important. And if you're not thinking about it, if you're not taking precautions, for example, if your IT department doesn't really have a plan or the resources to put such a plan in place, if there's a situation like a hack, that's going to put you at risk. If you don't have a strong data policy, one of the things that I'm spending a lot of my time with pharma companies is building these data and multi-channel marketing, I guess you call it like a playbook, right? So it's a guide to how to collect data carefully and how to put in certain protocols that will allow you and your marketing partners to be very respectful of information and make sure that you're doing what you need to protect that information. I think there are definitely these kinds of pieces till we get some of these unfortunate incidents that raise the eyebrows of maybe the CFO or the CEO or the board. Companies aren't going to take it as seriously, and you know, it's hard to do that now because I just have a stat here that I had to share with you. This comes from Becker's Hospital Review, John, which you may be familiar with. And they said that last year, 2014, was a record year for cyber attacks. And of the major data breaches reported in the U.S., 42% were attacking the healthcare industry. So that's huge. And that does include pharma, but it also includes major hospital systems and health insurers and so on. So that data now is out there. It's in the cloud. It's in the healthcare exchange set up through the ACA Act. We have a lot of data out there, and healthcare is vulnerable if companies don't take steps to make a change.
Right. Well, you know, there's lots of issues here, and even every pharmaceutical company and Genentech says no security system can prevent all potential security breaches. So my observation was, well, if that's true, and obviously it is, the first rule should be, well, what information are you requiring people to give you, and is it really necessary? Is the benefit of having that information and using it in a mobile app, for example, does the benefit outweigh the risk for the patient, let's say, or the physician, to provide that information? So I guess,
you're totally right.
So you would agree with me, the minimal necessary information should be collected in the first place.
The good news is I'm starting to see, pharma companies recognize the power of progressive registration. And you see this all over the web. You see this in online shopping. And maybe right now all we're going to do is capture your name and your email address. And we'll have all the corresponding privacy and security info that you have to check the box in order to sign up. But once you've done that and you've maybe received a little bit of our content and you feel confident and we've built a little bit of a relationship with you, now we might entice you or tease you with some other value to, hey, you know, if you provide some information about your geography, Dr. Smith, we can then automatically email or contact you when there's going to be an interesting symposium in your area where one of our representatives will be speaking. So if you can provide that value add in a way that makes it worthwhile to share information, you can cookie crumb it and build a profile of that customer over time. And frankly, if you're not able to get that ongoing relationship, you're probably not putting forth a very, very useful program because, again, especially when you're dealing with rare disease states, right, we're not talking about a lot of people. When you're trying to reach, let's say, U.S. physicians in a particular specialty, we don't need tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of individuals in our programs to make a difference. We need the right ones, and we need to build deeper relationships with them. So progressive registration, just like you said, you start with a little data, and then you kind of create more of an appetite for content, and in exchange, you're able to request more data, and people feel more comfortable that way.
Okay, Jeff. I mean, I think we've come to the end of the program, but I'd like to give you any opportunity to mention anything in closing that you didn't get a chance to mention, or just give some summary advice.
Yeah, actually, I would love to throw one thing out at you, John. I know you're always focused on innovation. And with your Pharma Guy Social Media Pioneer Award, which I've never won, but you know it's gone to a lot of very deserving people, so that's okay. Maybe one day. So the latest and greatest now that a lot of pharma communicators are talking about are wearables, right? This came up recently at a meeting I was at with sort of an executive brainstorming meeting at a mid-sized pharma, and they are pursuing some avenues in which they would be able to create a wearable go along with product they market. So sort of the pill plus philosophy. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So you would think, okay, well, that's great. Wearables, we don't have to worry about data issues there. Well, in fact, this is one of the up-and-coming areas for hackers. And this is just like a month ago, the FDA came out and told hospitals to stop using an infusion pump that happened to be made by Hospira because it was vulnerable to being hacked. And the FDA basically said it was the first time it had ever warned caregivers not to use a product because of a cybersecurity risk. And even though this particular product was sort of, it was a late model, it wasn't even being sold anymore by Hospira, they had upgraded to new models, there was a particular quirk of the software that ran this machine that somebody could actually hack into, open a port into the software and hack in and control how much medicine was being given outside of the hospital to a specific patient. And, you know, it actually sets up like a phenomenal James Bond premise or some other kind of action movie, if you think about it. But it's really serious. And fortunately, you know, that no hacks occurred, and Hospira was able to oversee a recall and take care of the issue in a timely fashion. Anything now that has a connection, and that includes, you know, your new Apple Watch and devices that people use, such as Fitbit and other kinds of bands that connect to your phone and connect to the internet, those are also potentially vulnerable. So not only do I not think this issue will ever be quote-unquote solved, I think it's going to expand in scope, and it just means that as we in pharma marketing look for ways to innovate, we are going to also have to keep an eye on managing risk. And cybersecurity, it can be addressed. There are some very basic ways we talked about, you know, such as making sure you have a data plan, data security plan, making sure there are IT personnel and people who are trained and staffed appropriately to manage these kinds of issues. And communicating about the importance. So it can be managed, but the threat and the risk is never going away. And I think pharma is in particular risk because of the importance of the work that pharma does, the wealth that pharma generates, and also because some of the negative perceptions of the industry that, you know, some people are looking to exploit. So if we keep all of these in mind, I think the industry can really make advances and avoid becoming the next Ashley Madison.
Yep. So pharma is a big target, and they should act accordingly, I guess. Well, Jeff, thanks for being a guest, and hopefully we'll run into each other again, maybe at a conference again, and we can catch up.
That would be great. I hope I see some more positive tweets coming from your account aimed at mine.
Well, you know, it's been said that pharma brands have benefited from Mac attacks. So, you know, don't sweat it.
You keep everyone honest, John. You do. So we all appreciate it.
I hope so. Okay, Jeff, thanks a lot. And thanks to my listeners. Until next time, this is Pharma Guy saying goodbye. Goodbye, Jeff.
Goodbye, John. Thanks again.
If he were to criticize your ad campaign, you would have to fight off a strong urge to thank him. If he was to praise your marketing campaign, you would list it on your resume. Whatever side of a pharma marketing issue Pharma Guy's currently on is the right side, even if he crosses over to the other side.